Welcome to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast for Tuesday, August 1st, 2023. I'm Lou DeVizio. Let's get right into the headlines. President Biden plans to travel to New Mexico next week to talk about his administration's effort to fight climate change as we hit record high temperatures this summer. Biden is expected to push for more clean energy manufacturing while touting the impacts of the Inflation Reduction Act. The White House says the law will help lower energy costs and create new manufacturing jobs for American workers. It includes incentives aimed at expanding wind and solar energy investments while reducing carbon emissions that contribute to global warming. But, of course, our state produces the second highest amount of oil in the country next to Texas, and the state budget relies heavily on oil and gas revenue. The Santa Fe New Mexican quoted the chairman of the state Republican Party, Steve Pierce, saying that Biden's visit is another step towards killing that revenue source. During his trip, President Biden also plans to travel to Arizona and Utah to talk about ending our reliance on fossil fuels. A group of New Mexicans is closer than it's ever been to being included in the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act after years of fighting for recognition. Thursday, the Senate approved an amendment to the RECA, formally adding New Mexico downwinders for the first time. Tina Cordova, co-founder of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, has been fighting for certain New Mexicans and their families to have the same acknowledgement and benefits as other Americans who've been exposed to nuclear testing. Cordova is personally connected to the issue, considering she's the fourth generation in her family to have cancer since nuclear testing began during the Manhattan Project. She also spoke to New Mexico in Focus correspondent Russell Contreras about this past week on New Mexico in Focus. That interview is coming up here on the podcast. According to Cordova, if the amendment passes the House, qualifying downwinders and uranium miners could receive up to $150,000 in compensation and have their medical bills covered entirely. Once approved, Cordova and her organization say they will make sure qualifying New Mexicans are enrolled in the program. The amendment includes $3 million to cover those payouts. After the release of the film Oppenheimer, we at New Mexico in Focus wanted to have a larger conversation about the legacies of nuclear testing in our state and whether the film should have included an examination of the devastating impacts of the scientists' work here. Joining Gene Grant on the line are attorneys Sophie Martin, Sean Griswold, editor at Source New Mexico, and Democratic former state senator Dee Dee Feldman. Here's Gene.
Now, our first topic today takes us to the movies, as Americans packed the theaters last week for the premiere of Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. Now, the three-hour max biopic follows the life of the physicist as he theorizes, creates, and questions the moral and fatal impact of the atomic bomb. Now, Sean, you saw the film. What will viewers living, let's say, outside the state learn about New Mexico from this film? Is this sort of a summation of where we were during the wartime effort?
You know, I don't think you're going to learn a lot about New Mexico from this film. New Mexico is a setting, it's a backdrop, it's kind of just there. Now, it does create this impression, you know, from a film perspective and the narrative that Nolan put together, is that Oppenheimer cared for New Mexico. There's a moment in the film where he talks about how he wants to design the lab there after understanding sort of the scientific advancements he just understood that could potentially create the atomic bomb that happened. And there's a scene in the movie where he's like, there's two things that I care about in life, and I'm paraphrasing here, is I love New Mexico and I love science, and I want to combine them at some point.
Interesting.
And so it doesn't really quite go into too much detail as to what his true passion was for New Mexico, why he felt New Mexico needed to be the place, other than perhaps just having a home here and just enjoying some of the mountain landscapes of northern New Mexico, which is a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. We all know and have fallen in love with it. But New Mexico, you're not going to get a lot of New Mexico. It's a backdrop. That's all it is.
Wow.
And it's very obvious that that's also part of a lot of, as we've seen in later years, even the general mission from the United States government in terms of what New Mexico's response is to nuclear development technology going forward. Mm-hmm. We're still barely considered.
Interesting point, that last point there. Mm-hmm. We have to come back and circle on that. Dee Dee, I want you to do a little show and tell here. Get on the desk. In 79, you wrote an 8-part series for the Albuquerque Journal called, quote, How Safe is New Mexico's Atomic City? If you could hold that up for the camera, that'd be really cool. And it's really kind of an interesting deal. 79 was a long time ago. I mean, that was a few full moons ago. What's changed in your reporting since, or have things gotten markedly better, worse, the same?
Well, the The way people look at Los Alamos is different now than the way they did, of course, during the Manhattan Project. There's not as much secrecy. There's not as much paranoia on the part of the people who live there. And we have come to sort of idealize in New Mexico the high income, the great education system, the
more PhDs than any other town more, in America.
New Mexico has become very dependent on this image of us as a brilliant community located in Los Alamos, Sandia, and our congressional delegation, for example, dares not challenge the jobs and the federal dollars that come into New Mexico for this. But since the atomic bomb was detonated, 70 some years ago, they're still disposing of waste. They're still making plutonium triggers. They're still trying to figure out what to do with the gaseous wastes that have tritium in it. And the state of New Mexico, is really pretty small potatoes compared to the lab and the resources that the lab has. And yet the state of New Mexico is tasked with overseeing and keeping the people of New Mexico safe. That's, I agree with Sean. The context, the New Mexico context, except for the pretty pictures, was kind of left out of that story. And we have our own collateral damage here.
Let's talk about that. Downwinders, that's the big one so far that folks are feeling like got left out of the narrative that Dee Dee was mentioning, Sophie. We're familiar with downwinders, those who live in the area of Trinity Test Site, exposed to unsafe levels of radiation with the wind after the explosion. Interesting point, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act is set to expire next year. That's an amazing thing. We haven't caught up with what Dee Dee mentioned, the problems, the legacy problems. Why are we not getting more traction on this and taking care of our own here, basically?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I partway through what you were describing, I wanted to mention, as the buildup for the Oppenheimer movie was happening and we were hearing more and more about it, the number of searches online for is Oppenheimer real started to shoot up. Like questions across the country about did this really happen? I'm not sure when you say we know about the downwinders, I'm not even really sure that a majority of New Mexicans know the story. It is ancient history for some people, right? The fact that the act is gonna expire, but also the fact that many New Mexicans are not eligible for compensation of any sort is a real travesty. And I do see our Congress people trying to address the senators, et cetera.
Opportunity, possibly? Push the ball forward here?
So I'm not, love that you use that word, because in my mind, Christopher Nolan made the decision that he was going to build his story in a particular way, right? And I really appreciate that there was an attempt on the part of some of the downwinders to try and get that story in front of him. It doesn't sound like it was particularly successful, and he had his story in mind. So this opportunity now, the fact that this film is huge this summer, I'm sure it will be all over the Oscars. There is an opportunity for education. I was so impressed with the group that put together trailers, essentially, to go in front of certain screenings here in New Mexico.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
The conversation that's happening, the opportunity to educate not just New Mexicans, but the country about the downwinder situation, the physical and economic impacts of being just even outside the blast zone that at the time they thought was dangerous. And now we know there was danger on a much larger scale for many more people.
That's right. Interesting. Sophie mentioned, Sean, the 15-second ad the Union of Concerned Scientists have in front of the a film. How did you, I don't know, were you on time for the film? I don't know if you saw that or not. I shouldn't ask you. Right. You might have walked in, but the film was a minute long. Who knows? That's the way I do it, so sorry about that.
That's okay.
Did you happen to catch that ad when you went to go see it?
Okay, so I did see the movie at a theater here in Albuquerque. Yeah. I got there as the previews had already started.
Gotcha.
So there were about three or four previews before the film started. I did not see that ad. I was aware that it happened.
That. Yeah.
So yeah, I wasn't sure if it aired before or if it even aired as part of this theater's thing.
Right.
But we did have a reporter named Kelsey Atherton. They're actually Albuquerque-based journalist, one of the prominent defense journalists, as well as nuclear defense systems journalist in the country. Mm-hmm. And so Kelsey, he reviewed the film at a panel that was put together by people who are supportive of that message, some of them who were involved in the message that also included downwinders, you know, people who survived the atomic blast. And after they all watched the film, there was an overall discussion that brought up a lot of what I was talking about earlier about how New Mexico is not present in the film. And what we heard, not only just the absence of downwinders, who there was people who are now adults, who had family members who saw the atomic blast at Trinity site, who weren't alerted, who thought the world was over and ending.
That's
there.
Right.
Like, we have quotes from people that are saying, my grandparents got on their hands and knees and started praying because they watched what is the, you know, the pinnacle moment of this Christopher Nolan movie, which is the Trinity blast site. And there's no mention of that. There's also no mention of, and I mean, there's a conversation about how Oppenheimer and the US government built Los Alamos, built a town. And there's no mention of the people who were local, Hispanics, Native people, who were the people who built the roads, built the houses, did the child care, did all of the manual labor that made Los Alamos what it is now. There's no mention of that. They're not even background actors, really, entirely in all of it. So it leads to that idea that New Mexico is just a setting. It's an invisible place. On top of that, you don't even see or even hear much of the conversation in the film about how uranium was even extracted.
Yeah.
There's no conversation about New Mexico extraction here. There's one mention about something in Oak Flats, which I believe is in Tennessee, and it's one quick line.
Huh.
And that's basically it, whereas the race to get enough of the, you know, raw mineral to raw material to build this bomb is kind of just another prop itself without actually discussing how it happened.
That's unfortunate.
And then real quickly to the point of compensation for downwinders, Danielle Prokop is a reporter with Source New Mexico who also has been following a lot of the nuclear defense systems and nuclear waste technology or nuclear waste storage that we have here in New Mexico, because it's an international business. We've evolved from the Manhattan Project to becoming the world's dumping ground for nuclear waste in New Mexico.
That's right.
And local communities in southern New Mexico are actually inviting it. They want it. This is, we've talked about
before.
It's economic development in the billions of dollars, you know? And so speaking with Danielle ahead of this conversation and our taping, we actually got some insight into what Senator Ben Ray Lujan is trying to do to continue to advance the RECA compensation bill. We're being told that currently he's gonna be trying to move that into the Defense Budget Act. And then if that were to happen, that's going to be their way to get that in there to provide some additional funding. We're not sure exactly on details as to how long that funding will be. But then, of course, that's all then going to become under the review of, you know, Congress as it negotiates a potential government shutdown. So while this is one effort to slip it in, and that may not even be the best term, this is one effort to kind of get this appropriation available so people can continue to get money, it's still going to have layers of politics that could potentially stop it.
He knows that bill's going to get voted on. So if he's in, right, if it's in, great. If it's not, I mean, I think, you know, not to, I'm in no way disagreeing with you. It's like, I think it could also be viewed as like a concession piece if there's not enough support within Congress for it.
And
his hope we can't afford it.
Yeah, and his hope is that Republicans have already approved a budget on the defense budget, which controls the House, and so the Senate would just send it back for reconsideration, and he feels as if this is the best way to do that.
Interesting. Dee Dee, let's pick up on where Sean was at here, this legacy we have here in New Mexico. You know, the list, you know, radiation, nuclear energy, toxic waste, WIP, ongoing work at Los Alamos, you reported on in the 70s. Does a mainstream movie like Oppenheimer just reinforce this idea that New Mexico is open for any and all business related to nuclear destruction and waste? Is this the overall takeaway if you're living in Maine and Minnesota and Iowa and other places?
It could be.
Yeah.
I think it could be. And the irony is even compounded for me by the fact that the nuclear bomb that was detonated, it's like a firecracker compared to what they are building now and what they are talking about as tactical nuclear weapons now. And, you know, in the 80s and the 70s, there was a pretty strong anti-nuclear movement nationwide. You remember the Silkwood film at that time?
Absolutely.
And New Mexico was not a part of that anti-nuclear movement, except for a few of us, and we went in the opposite direction. And the result is, you know, what you saw with uranium mining and the damage that that caused. And it was only an economic downturn that really, stopped our participation in the front end of the nuclear cycle. Right. We still have the rear end of the nuclear cycle, the disposal, which many New Mexicans feel like we sort of started this. So we owe it to the nation to dispose of that, of this, at least the defense waste. So it's been a devil's bargain all the way along, and I think the people of New Mexico are coming up on the short end.
Yep. Now, an interview with a woman who's lived through the horrors left behind after the Trinity test. Tina Cordova is the founder of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and has been working for years to earn recognition and compensation from the federal government. New Mexico In Focus correspondent Russell Contreras sat down with Cordova to talk about being overlooked for years. This interview was recorded before Thursday's Senate vote to add downwinders to the RECA through amendment. Of course, that still has to pass both chambers on Capitol Hill and earn a signature from the president. We'll let you know when that happens. In the meantime, here's Russell.
Tina, thank you for joining us here on New Mexico In Focus.
Absolutely, Russell. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
The new movie, Oppenheimer, was just released. You saw the film. What was your reaction to that?
Well, you know, my first reaction is I wish they would have focused a little more on the people in New Mexico who were literally participants in the test at Trinity. But it's not just that. I mean, let's be real here. Without the people of New Mexico, we would have had no Manhattan Project and no Trinity test because, as a matter of fact, it was the people of New Mexico who, number one, mined the uranium. No fission without uranium, right? So we never really spend enough time reflecting on the fact that New Mexico, through the Navajo Nation, Laguna, and Acoma Pueblo, we have over 1,000 abandoned uranium mine and mill sites. They extracted 32 million tons of uranium in that process. They used people's poverty against them and the promise of a better life, and they sent them into those mines without adequate safety gear, and they've been dying ever since. So there's that. And then there's the fact that, you know, they bussed the Hispanic and Native women up to Los Alamos, and they're the ones that cooked every meal, cleaned the houses, changed every diaper, and their husbands were bussed up there as well. They're the ones that built the roads and the bridges and the facilities and served as janitors cleaning the radioactive waste off of the instrumentation. Some of these men lost their lives in explosive accidents. So we have all that, and they'll never, you know, reflect on the fact that people lived as close as 12 miles to the Trinity test. So for me, filming of the Oppenheimer movie in New Mexico, coming here and taking advantage of our tax incentives, over-glorifying the science and the scientists and not reflecting on the part that the people of New Mexico played in this project is a huge error on their part and a huge omission of the entire history. And it's basically just a perpetuation of the lie that's always been told. And so I was disappointed in that regard.
Take me back to, for people who don't know, to the Trinity test. Your family lived near where the bomb was detonated and where this test took place. What were the effects long-term of that test on your family and yourself?
Well, to answer that question, let me also remind everybody that if you draw a radius around Trinity at 50 miles, we happen to know because we've done the research that there were 15,000 children, women, and men living adjacent to the Trinity test site. That's far too many people living far too close to a nuclear test site. So what has happened since then? Well, we were highly overexposed to radiation, and some new mapping was released last Friday. There was an article in the New York Times about this. A young scientist from Princeton recreated the test and the fallout deposition based on today's technology. And what we know now that in those first two those first 10 days after Trinity, there was a large deposition of radiation all over New Mexico. Some areas received really high levels. That actually translates into negative health effects. We all know that radiation exposure is very dangerous to human health. And so in my family, I'm the fourth generation to have cancer since Trinity. I wasn't alive at the time of Trinity. My exposure may have not come from Trinity. It may be from the Nevada test site, which we know we were also downwind of. But regardless, this has become a multi-generational problem. I'm the fourth generation in my family to have cancer since 1945. I had two great-grandfathers alive at the time who died in 1955 from what was described as stomach cancer. We'll never fully know because there was no treatment. They gave them morphine, sent them home to die. Both my grandmothers had cancer. My dad died from cancer after having two very distinctly different oral cancers that he didn't have risk factors for. He didn't drink excessively, didn't smoke, didn't use chewing tobacco, had no viruses. He developed two primary oral cancers. I had thyroid cancer. The first question they asked me was, when were you exposed to radiation? The very sad thing is, in my family now, we know who the fifth generation is. I have a 23-year-old niece studying art at college in California who has had her life upended because she's been diagnosed with thyroid cancer as well. And I wish I could say that this is unique to my family. It's not.
Has there been any government acknowledgement about this?
There's never been any government acknowledgement. The government's never come back to basically take a full view look at this either. Long ago, we should have had an epidemiological study taking place here where they literally went into these villages and accounted for everybody that was there and also tracked what happened to them. But none of that has ever happened here. We've never had any study that actually addresses the health effects. Now, there have been studies like a CDC study that said, as the part in the CDC study, LAHADRA, Los Alamos Historical Document Retrieval and Assessment, literally the chapter 10 that's devoted to Trinity says that they believe that in parts of New Mexico, the exposure to human beings could have been as much as 10,000 times what is considered acceptable today. So it's no wonder we have four and five generations of people with cancer in New Mexico. We document families like that all the time. It's not unusual.
And in the movie, the lead up to that Trinity test is a major point of that movie. What was your reaction when this bomb was, you know, they film it and a great camera angle, a lot of suspense. But what was your reaction when it went off, when you were watching this, and then the immediate aftermath and how it was portrayed?
Well, I had a lot of anxiety in advance of watching the movie, and I knew that it was going to be very difficult to watch. I also knew that probably being present in this movie would bring me as close to the actual events as I'd ever be after hearing hundreds of stories from people. And, you know, I was very emotional. The whole thing was very emotional for me. I only thought about the stories that people told me, the times that people told me we thought it was the end of the world. You know, my mother gathered us up in bed and we started praying the rosary in Spanish. My mother pulled the car over on the side of the road and she made us kneel on the side of the road and we started praying the rosary. That theme runs through all these histories, that they thought it was the end of the world. And you can imagine, it was so massive, so enormous, that of course people thought it was the end of the world. And I have a friend, Paul Pino, who does this work for me, and he always says, can you imagine what people thought when they thought the sun was rising in the west instead of the east? They would think it was the end of the world. For me, it was very emotional to watch. And I was just, as I said already, so disappointed that they had no reflection on the people that lived adjacent to the Trinity site, the thousands of people that lived in those communities, you know, 20 and 30 and 40 miles away, like my community, Tularosa.
As the movie went on and the biopic showed basically the challenges that Oppenheimer would face afterwards, realizing what he unleashed, did you feel any sympathy for the character of Oppenheimer when he was expressing regret about what this bomb could do? Not what it has done, but what it could do.
You know, I understand that he had regrets, but for me, there was that moment in the film where they show his wife hanging out the bed sheets, and she appears to be in Los Alamos. They present it as though she's in Los Alamos. And all I could think of was, The truth is, she wasn't in Los Alamos. He sent his family away to safety while he allowed us all to remain in danger here. And so it's really difficult for me to give him a pass card or to feel any kind of empathy towards him. And I will say, he had every opportunity to bring to the attention of people the idea that maybe somebody here was damaged or harmed. And I've never read any place in the history books where actually he ever reflected on that, took a moment to bring that to anyone's attention. And they full well knew ahead of time that that bomb was going to create massive fallout. I don't think they realized how enormous it would be, but they knew that fallout was going to be a byproduct of the test. And they moved ahead with it anyway. And so it's really difficult for me to have empathy towards people who just didn't see us. They didn't see us then, and obviously the filmmakers don't see us today.
Last time you were on the show, since then, Henry Herrera, who is believed to be the last known witness to the Trinity test, he saw it when he was 11, has died. He died at 87 after suffering years of mouth cancer and a reconstructed jaw. What did he teach you when you got involved in this movement about what was at stake and how people were affected?
Henry is a true hero in the eyes of a lot of us. I view Henry that way because he consistently told his truth year after year after year, as sick as he was for all those years. And even at times when people tried to discount his truth, he told his truth with pure dedication to that truth. And so it's been very hard for our community of Tularosa to suffer through the loss of Henry, but so many people. I mean, we light luminarias in July in memory of people we've lost, and we have well over 800 names, and it's just through a voluntary process. And Henry is one of those now. And I think the one thing I always remember about Henry when I think about him, other than his amazing account of that day, is that he and his wife made a list for me one time of the people that they knew in Tularosa who had died from cancer. And the list was close to 500 names, and Henry told me, I played the guitar at almost every one of those funerals. And I thought, imagine, even through his own suffering and through his own health challenges, he showed up for his community that way. And he's a hero. He's, you know, I always say a lot of great men lived besides Robert Oppenheimer. And Robert Oppenheimer was an incredibly flawed man. And Henry told me once, Tina, we didn't have much, but we had everything we needed. We had running water, we had fertile soil, and we took care of each other. And he said, and it was all destroyed after that bomb. And I think about Henry and how he is absolutely 180 degree difference from Robert Oppenheimer. But Henry was still a great man, and you'll never see a movie about his life. And that to me is very disappointing. We have never been given the recognition that we should have been given.
Thanks to everyone who contributed to the podcast this week. Keep an eye out for an extra episode up this Friday, all about the ongoing writers and actors strike that's shutting down film production across the country, including here in New Mexico. Gene talks with writer and producer Kirk Ellis, who breaks down what each side wants and why it might take a while before an agreement is reached. Plus, you'll hear from Bryan Cranston as he fired up demonstrators from the writers and actors guilds. That podcast will be available for download Friday. For now, follow our pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube throughout the week. You can give us feedback or just stay up to date as we post previews and news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Senior Producer Lou DeVizio for Tuesday, August 1st, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great week, everyone.